I'm Rebecca Clark. We're in studio this morning with award-winning singer-songwriter and one of Knox County's finest, Carrie Curt Phillips. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here, Rebecca.
Nice to have you with us. Also in studio with us, Nicole Carey, our Director of Operations here at WVUB and WFML and WVUT Television. So, Carrie, big performance tomorrow night. We do want to ask you a couple of questions just about your journey in songwriting. I would like to ask, what was the first song you ever wrote? How old were you when you wrote your first song, and what was it? Do you remember?
I don't even have to hesitate. I've been asked this before, and I can tell you that I believe I was eight, and it was a parody to Johnny Cash's song "Folsom Prison Blues," and it was at a camp out at a grade school buddies, that lived close by, and so I wrote a parody while we were sitting there that night to Folsom Prison Blues called School Bus Blues, and you could imagine mm-hmm. it was.
Do you remember parts of it?
Oh gosh, it was just I can hear that school bus coming. It's coming around the bend. I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know.
I'm
stuck in the principal's office. The time keeps dragging on. So it was that kind of thing, yeah. It was a tremendous hit amongst our crew. Yeah.
I bet it was.
Yeah.
So 8 years old, who were some of your musical influences through the years?
My musical influences from that age, I can even remember listening to music at age two. I can tell my mother what records I listened to, and I can remember listening to Mahalia Jackson at age two. On record, I can remember listening to a soundtrack for How the West Was Won at age two, and just a myriad of stuff. There was a while when I was really big into funk music, everything from George Clinton to Isley Brothers, and I studied that stuff meticulously, and bluegrass, and I mean it just so, R&B, Robert Johnson, stuff, all of it I had, and so it just took a wide gamut, but my everything finally funneled in, and my, I found my niche, and nothing moved me like the country stuff did, So, mm-hmm.
yeah.
The Stone Cold Country was really what I was most attracted to and felt at home with, felt a special connection to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've had many different hats over the years. You've managed Joe Diffie. You wrote songs. If you could go back and do one thing over again, what was the best part of your career?
Oh my goodness! Well, I just got to be perfectly truthful. I didn't manage Joe Diffie. I was his tour manager.
You were the tour manager.
Tour manager, and I was a sideman for him. I played acoustic for him and tour manager, so I did double duty for him. But if I could do one thing over again, I know it sounds cliche, but I really don't think I would have changed. I would change a thing. It was all so perfectly timed out, and the way it happened. I look back, and I think if this hadn't happened, then this wouldn't have happened. And if this, and I tell people, when they're young and they move to Nash Vegas, I said you've got to keep your options open and don't have this tunnel vision that I'm going to be this, I'm going to be a singer, I'm going to be a songwriter, I'm going to be an engineer, because I know some of the best songwriters in the world, that swore up and down they were going to be a singer, but they didn't, they found their niche. So you got to be open, and some of the people that swore they were going to be an incredible artist became the best merchandise people in the world, or came part of some huge music business accounting firm, or became music business attorneys, that are very successful. It's just crazy. You never know in that business when you get there, if you keep your options open, where you'll wind up. You'll find your niche in that business. But everybody doesn't, wind up. And mine just happened to everything. Just happened so
mm-hmm. just
like
had
it was pre-planned.
Great flow
yeah.
to
right.
it. Mm-hmm. To your
think,
entire
how
career.
How in the world could you ever duplicate that, So I don't know. I don't think I would change a thing.
You've
I might have been sick less, but even then,
sure.
Because I had, a horrible, health through the whole thing. But when I look back at it, You know, there was one, my first number one song was "Is It Cold in Here? Is It Just You?" You know, and if I'd not been in the hospital at Vanderbilt, you know, recovering from a heart attack, you know, the nurse wouldn't have walked in, and I wouldn't, you know, exclaimed about how freaking cold it is in a hospital room, and I was freezing to death, you know, and I wouldn't have said, "Could you get me a pencil and a piece of paper?" And at that point, you know, I was couldn't get arrested. You know, I thought I was going to have to come back home to Vincennes with my tail between my legs. You know, as I told somebody just a few minutes ago, I had a buddy, Ed Marshall, that when I told him I was moving to Nashville, we were sitting underneath the shop light out at his farm late one night, and I told him, I said, "I'm going." And he said, "Phillips, I'm going to give you 3 years." You know, well, my 3 years was almost up, and Ed was a pretty big guy, you know. He'd have drugged my butt back home, you know. But if not for that heart attack, you know, so it all worked out perfect, you know. And I had my biggest hits when I was, you know, on dialysis, or when, you know, it got to the point where Snickerdoodle, my wife, would say, "It's time for you to get sick again. You know, I need a new Louis Vuitton." You know what I mean? So the timing was perfect on it, and I don't think I could change anything.
Well, thank you for sharing that. That was really personable and very interesting to hear. You mentioned "It's Cold in Here" was one of the songs that you've written. Name a couple of others that have really made it big.
It was my first number one song. It was, and it opened, you know, it gave me some gravitas and some credibility in the business. You know, you know, that first one is the hardest one to get, it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, it just after that, it was, the timing on it was, there again, you know, it's just, you just, there's no way to explain it, you know, other than you don't look at it like you sit around and wait for something to fall out of the sky, or you get, people think that as a songwriter, you sit around, you wait till you get some kind of, epiphany that stimulates you to write a song, and all of a sudden you grab a guitar and it falls out in 5 minutes, you know, it's, most of the time you spend 8, 10, 12 hours in a room with somebody, your co-writer, and walk out with nothing, absolutely nothing. That's most of the times, and you hate each other. You're cussing each other, you know. Never want to see the other person again. You know? But once in a great while, you know, you'll stumble onto something and it'll blow both of your skirt up, and you get excited about it, and, you know, you click, mm-hmm. and it's magic when it happens.
Yeah. The best ideas come when they just, like you said, they just come to you. Maybe not sitting in a room for 8 hours, but
I think it was Bergman, you know, one of the greatest composers of all time, that said, you know, he said that he pretty much reiterated the same thing on there, but said that the trick is that I have to be there every day, sitting at the piano, ready for it. Hmm. And I have to be trying to find it. You know, if I'm not there and it comes, I won't get it, you know. But I have to be there digging for it. Very seldom does it come, but I got to be there looking for it, you know.
So what usually comes first for you, lyrics or the music?
For me, it's almost always lyrics, you know. Some people, it's melody, you know. But for me, I'm a lyric-driven person. So a lot of times for me, the lyric will drive the melody. The lyric will have a built-in melody, you know. Or the lyric determines whether it's going to be a tempo or a ballad or, you know, and depending upon what the lyric says, so. Mm-hmm. For me, I've always been the wordsmith kind of guy, and you know, that's the beautiful thing about co-writing. You know, you have to be a chameleon to be successful. And if I sit down with a thoroughbred that's an incredible lyricist, then I concentrate on melody. If I sit down with a guy that's, you know, a melodic genius, I concentrate on lyric. And sometimes we both do as much as the other on each. You know, so it's about just adapting, improvising, and overcoming.
Very good. You know, there's a rumor that Down on the Farm is about Knox County, Indiana. Is there truth to that, Gary Kirk?
That is completely true, yes. There is. It's not a rumor. That is the fact.
That is so cool.
About the life we used to live when I was younger days, and where we would spend a lot of our weekends out at the Marshall Farm outside of town. And but those wonderful people that had a lot to do with my music career, you know, it was during that period when I picked up the guitar and put it down, and I'd pick it up. That was a period after I graduated from high school that I'd picked it up and was getting more and more into it. And I had a friend of mine that I lived with. We both moved up out at the same time and moved out on our own And we lived in a little house on Main Street. And he told me one day, he knew the Marchionneaux and knew Ed, and said, you need to come out to the Marchionneaux one. This is a cold winter night. And he said, you need to come out and hang out there. He said, bring your guitar. He said, these guys would really love it. So he drugged me out there one night, and we sat in a little office out in the pole barn. It was about, you know, it was maybe a tenth the size of this studio, and three or four of us crammed in there, you know, and they popped corn in that little room, and we huddled up, tried to stay warm in it, and I played music for them all night long, and that grew into a relationship where we played music there weekend after weekend, you know, farm parties.
Yeah, can you review the rural route rules for us?
The rural route rules. Well, the rural route rules would be, you know, you certainly shut the gates, as it says in the song, when you go through. We used to have to pass through some gates sometime where cattle were to get back to where Big John Marshall called it Camp David. We'd go back to Camp David to have these parties there on the farm and some back acreage on the farm. So you had to shut the gate, and you had to, you know, stay out of the beans, stay out of the crop.
Right.
Couldn't do that. And you certainly, if you got too, if things got too far out of hand, you would be, shut down quickly.
So who was heading down to the creek? That's what we all want to know. You don't have to reveal that, Gary Garrett.
some folks will remain unnamed.
Oh, how fun. So who have been some of your favorite artists that you've collaborated with over the years?
Well, artists that I've collaborated with, you know, I collaborated with Joe Diffie, of course, in the early days, you know, and I've written with everybody from Ronnie Millsap, you know. I mean, it's just crazy, you know, the opportunities I had, you know, to write with people like that, you know, and, you know, to Tanya Tucker, you know, and gosh, you know, Bobby Bear I got to write with, you know, people that I always idolized, you know, and said I wanted to be able to write like them, you know, and to sit there in the room with them, and, you know, I stared at Ronnie Millsap. I don't know if he was staring at me or not, but you know, it was a crazy, crazy, crazy time in my life to get to meet those people and to be asked to write a song, you know, ask me if I would write a song with them, you know, and it's just, it's surreal sometimes when I look back at it, you know.
Yeah, I bet. We're talking with Kerry Curt Phillips. His website is kerrykurt.com. And tomorrow night, Kerry will be performing at the Red Skelton Performing Arts Center. What can people expect from your show?
Gosh, I don't know. That's a good question, Rebecca. I never know what to expect. It's usually unscripted. You know, it's in Nashville, these what we call writer's nights. You know, we sit around and we have what they used to call a guitar pull, and we take turns, you know, singing songs that we've created and that we've had hits with. And what they hear is they hear the raw version, the unpasteurized version of a song. You hear it like it sounded the day it was finished, you know, in its infancy, before it was produced and homogenized, or, you know, went through all the production filters. So you get that version of it, and you kind of hear how it started out, and we tell some stories about how it was created, you know, and about how it came to be, and then sometimes we'll sing a song that hasn't been recorded that we think should have been. And you know, usually we do this with two or three people, but I'm going to do this by myself, and we're going to talk about, you know, the country music, the documentary, the Ken Burns documentary that Nicole will tell you more about, you know, and we're going to try to answer anybody's questions that they might have about that, you know. So,
has there ever been a song that you just envisioned differently? When you put pen to paper and then the artist recorded it, you thought, gosh, that's not how I heard it at all.
There has been, and you know, that's one of the hardest things about it, is you write a song and you make a recording of it, and spend the money to do that, which gives you something to present, you know, because you can't put yourself in front of everybody. When I first came to town or went to Nashville, you could do that. They would, you know, you would sit down in front of an artist with a guitar, or they'd throw you in a car, a publisher would, you know, or a pitch person or a plugger, and say, get in the car, I'm taking you to see Reba. And I'll never forget, you know, they carried me to see Reba and said, play your song for her, you know, and she said, you know, it was, it was crazy, you know. You know, I mean,
I'm in Reba's presence.
Yes, you know, it was like, you know, I was green as a gourd, you know, but anyway, so nowadays, you make a recording that almost sounds like a record, you know, mm-hmm. and that's your demonstration recording. I call them demos. And you think that that song, that the person who records it, of course, it's their producer, usually, that makes the final decision on what that's going to sound like. And they decide the arrangement. They decide what instruments will be on it, who's going to play those instruments, and you know, where the turnarounds will be, what the intro will sound like, and the outro, maybe they're going to repeat the chorus again, or maybe they're going to take the bridge out, or maybe they say, well, it needs a bridge, and they'll come back and say, we need a bridge for this. No, it doesn't, you know. But, have to weigh those decisions based upon how bad do I want this cut, you know. What artist is it on? Is it on a platinum-selling artist, or is it on a brand-new artist that has, you know, can't get arrested yet, you know, hadn't sold cardboard, you know? Or do I want to hold this thing and keep it in integrity like it is and wait until these platinum artists have had a chance to hear it, you know? Mm-hmm. Maybe they would take it. Or do I say a bird in the hand's worth two in the bush? So oftentimes you'll get one that gets recorded, and you think it was going to be great, and they've changed it up. They haven't changed the lyric. Usually they don't take that kind of liberty without asking you. If they're going to change the lyric, they'll say, but sometimes it's the production, you know. I mean, they might take something that's a waltz and make it a 6-8 time or something. Or they might take something and they might, you know, speed up the beats per second by 10, you know, or something, or slow it down, or, you know, just change the whole feel of the song by the way they produced it. And you go, good God, they've ruined it. They've ruined my daggone song, you know. But, you know, that's the business, you know. It's like somebody who writes a book and they make a movie out of it. And they go, oh, my gosh. And you go, oh, the movie was so good. And sometimes I think, oh, if they could only hear the demo I did of it, you know. It wouldn't have stalled out at 30 on the charts, you know. It would have. But that's just the business, you know. You have to turn it loose and keep your fingers crossed that it finds the light of day.
Well, I've got so many more questions, but I'll just have to wait till tomorrow night and ask you, maybe at
the
event.
That'd be great.
We're speaking with Carrie Kurt Phillips. CarrieKurt.com is his website, and he'll be performing tomorrow night at the Red Skeleton Performing Arts Center. Nicole Carey in studio. Nicole, tell us about the event.
The doors are going to open at Red at 6 p.m., and this is a free event. We are so happy to be able to provide this event free to the public. We are offering preferred seating. If you want to become a supporting member of WVUT, you can do that by going to our website. There are instructions there, and you can get two preferred seats with your membership as a thank you right now. But we're going to start the night at 7 o'clock with a screening of the Ken Burns documentary, Country Music. And I've seen the screener that we're going to show tomorrow night. I've seen several clips. And let me tell you, Ken Burns documentaries are fabulous. What he has done showcasing country music and how it came about and its legacy and what it means to especially us here in Midwest America. I mean, I really think it's going to be a huge hit. And so folks are going to be able to get to see a screener of that. You might want to bring some tissues because the last clip we show definitely made me cry. So I'm pretty sure a lot of people are going to feel a lot of emotions with a good sampling of what this documentary holds. And as I was trying to think what we could do for the public to really kick off this documentary, I wanted to find a way to tie into our roots here in Vincennes, Knox County. And of course, that meant Carrie Kurt Phillips. So I got a hold of Carrie Kurt, and he's been so gracious. He and his lovely wife, Linda, coming to town, taking time out of their busy schedule to get to visit back home and to be able to take the stage tomorrow night and just to share his time and going through his career in Nash Vegas. I love calling it that. I'm just so thankful that he could make the trip up there to share an evening with us. So I'm so excited for our event tomorrow night and so excited to see the Red Skelton Theater full. And I'm sure it's going to be. And so it's going to be a really great night. And so thank you so much, Carrie Kurt, for coming up here and visiting with us this weekend.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. It'll be great. We'll have lots of old friends there, hopefully. And And hopefully it's late enough in the garden season, you know, that we won't have a bunch of rotten tomatoes out there.
Oh, no.
We'll have some fun. So it'd be great. And we got hatch show prints, too.
That's right. So as soon as we're done with the show, Carrie Kerr has offered to sit and sign these special hatch print posters that we've had made up. And they're pretty fabulous. I'm pretty proud of them. Ewing Printing has done a great job of designing and printing those up for us. And so everyone in attendance can get one, can get a couple. And Carrie Kurt's going to sign those after the show.
Okay.
Great memorabilia to hold on to.
Yes, absolutely. I want to thank Carrie Kurt for coming in and Nicole as well. I'm Rebecca Clark. We've been speaking with award-winning singer-songwriter and one of Knox County's finest, Carrie Kurt Phillips. CarrieKurt.com is his website. Carrie Kurt, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you, Rebecca.